Welcome back to The Roundtable. I'm Sarah Ledoux. The world premiere of the new musical, Single Girl's Guide, is running at Capitol Repertory Theater in Albany, New York, through March 30th. Inspired by Jane Austen's Emma, the show is flush with fun songs and features movie send-ups of 1960s PSAs. It's 1966 Manhattan, and newspaper columnist Emma Woodhouse writes a column she inherited from an older, now deceased woman. Emma is still single and about to turn 30. In a Helen Gurley Brown-inspired move, she recruits a single girl from Rhode Island and vows to overhaul her life. The music and lyrics are by Tommy Newman, and the production is directed by its book writer, Gordon Greenberg. Both join us now. Gordon, Tommy, welcome to the Roundtable.
Thank you.
Hi.
So how did you two meet and begin working together?
We were paired up through Goodspeed Musicals in Connecticut. Donalyn Hilton, who's the line producer there, she heard that I was working on, with a couple of other guys, a musical called Band Geeks. And we were doing a concert at Ars Nova in New York City. She thought that Gordon would be a really great match for the material and for us. And so she gave him a call and convinced him to come down to Ars Nova to see the concert. And I guess he liked it. Afterwards, got in touch with us and we really hit it off. And so we started working together on that. And that collaboration turned into other collaborations, which then turned into this.
And where did the idea to adapt Emma come from? Whose idea was that?
That was Gordon.
It's something I'd been thinking about for a long time, for like 8 years, just because the idea of that person who loves to set their friends up on dates and help them self-actualize in different ways, but sometimes has trouble seeing how to do that for themselves, really resonated for me. I'm something of a yenta with my friends, and was single for the longest time, no longer, but that applied not only to romantic ideas, but just to the idea of enjoying seeing people accomplish their utmost, and the line between being helpful and being meddlesome was one that fascinated me. So the story always seemed like an interesting one to explore. And I started working really 8 years ago with Tom Kitt and Amanda Green and a producer named Amy Niederlander on this idea. It never really went anywhere apart from a few sort of meetings in New York talking about it. We, in fact, were about to fly over Frank McGinnis, a playwright who wrote Someone to Watch Over Me and had never written a musical and was living, teaching in Dublin. He thought, oh, that could be cool. I'll write a musical. And then the day before he was meant to come over and we were going to have our first big creative meeting, he called and said, I can't write a musical. I'm not coming. And the project just sort of went away. And then Tom Kitt won a Pulitzer Prize for Next to Normal. And everyone kind of continued with their separate projects. But it stayed in the back of my mind. And then after Band Geeks was over, I said to Tommy, I kind of love this idea. Do you take a look, take a listen? And I thought, I'll write it myself instead of standing on the sidelines and waiting for somebody else to write it. That was a little over 2 years ago, and here we are with our first production.
Of course, there's a lot of steps of production and development between the idea, the agreed upon idea, and then getting a world premiere. What have you both had to do? How do you work on the show together? Where does it go? Where does it get workshopped before it comes to Cap Rep?
The version that you're seeing right now at Cap Rep is the product of, I guess, a lot of writing retreats. Tommy teaches down in Alabama at a university, and I've been working mainly in New York and L.A. There's a lot of Skype, a lot of email, and then these invaluable writers' retreats at Goodspeed Musicals where we can be in the same place, in the same house, with access to the resources of a theater that primarily does musicals. We then did a pretty exhaustive reading at Ars Nova in New York where that very first Band Geeks concert happened. And they're sort of an incubator for new works. And a lot of what they do is more avant-garde, more experimental, sort of East Village-y, which I guess would now be Brooklyn-y,
right.
Which I guess would now be Queens-y. I don't even know where the avant-garde exists anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But this was a more conventional musical for them, but something that they supported generously. And that particular reading was also supported by Proctors and Capitol Rep. And it's where things sort of crystallized for the first time, and we realized that we had a show that made people laugh and moved people and was worth pursuing. I think I may be leaving out one step. ASCAP?
Oh, yes, ASCAP, the Disney ASCAP workshop. Stephen Schwartz was one of the people who chose the material, and then he was part of a panel that then gave us some critique and helped us move along to the next step.
A lot of critique.
A lot of critique.
An abundance of critique.
But it's absolutely invaluable. You know, I think especially for musicals, you know, when you look at their development process, you start in one place, and by the time you're finished with, you know, the year, the 2 years, the 7 years of development that goes into them, you definitely find a place that's, you know, I don't know if it's better than where you started. Sometimes you start to take backward steps, but development is absolutely invaluable, and we're so grateful to have had all of the people believe in this and believe in this product along the way. Not the least of which is Cap Rep, which has done a really beautiful production. And we've done quite a lot of development actually here as well. That first week was really catching up with. We had a workshop that was planned in New Jersey in earlier this year. But then when I came up for the workshop at the beginning of the year, the hurricane hit. And
so Tommy was stuck in New York. And I was stuck in Los Angeles.
Right. And there was no workshop.
Oh, no.
So our first week here of rehearsals at Capitol Rep ended up being our first workshop. So we did a lot of rewrites.
I think that the product we've got now makes a lot of sense. And the show has just been a real labor of love, I think, for both of us.
And how do you hook up with the folks at Cap Rep? How did that partnership begin?
Well, that was... Gordon, yeah.
I actually met them a long time ago. I directed Song of Singapore there. It must have been 9 years ago, I think. I'm bad with time. I always think it's shorter than it is.
That's
but
okay.
So maybe it was 19, but it was a long time ago. And I, since then, have directed 5 other shows there. So Maggie, the artistic director, and I have kind of a great working relationship and a great social relationship, too. And a mutual admiration society. We'd had successful collaborations in more than one sort of aesthetic or sensibility. So I thought, this is a great place because Capitol Rep audiences are sophisticated enough to embrace a variety of styles and sensibilities. And as this show was developing, I was hoping that it could be frothy and sassy and entertaining and a great night out, but also have the substance and resonance of something like Mad Men with the themes that sort of the more things change, the more they stay the same. And all of the ideas about women's changing roles in the workplace and in society and gender kind of roles and the meaning and substance of marriage all remain in the national discourse. I kind of thought that makes this a piece that is still relevant, is uniquely relevant because it's timeless, you know.
Recognizing that you're both very close to it, and so this might not be a fair question, I was wondering if you had a favorite moment or two from the show as it's been realized. I know you're responsible for creating it, so hopefully every moment works, but if with this
cast...
That's
like saying, do you like it better when your kid rides the bike or when...
Of course.
Well, I love the movies, only because they're different, and I actually started my life thinking I was going to become a filmmaker, and I was briefly directing commercials through J. Walter Thompson, JWT, an ad agency. And so making those was kind of a nice way to revisit that that art form. But generally in the show, I'm in love with Tommy's score, I have to say, and the songs don't leave my head. I sing them all the time.
Aww.
And it's hard to pick which one of them is the most exciting, but they all kind of have heart and melody. And, you know, I tell everyone he's the, you know, he's like the Alan Menken of our generation.
Wow. Well, I hope I live up to that. I don't know. I think one of my favorite is Gordon and I, you know, we were talking about a moment in the second act where Knightley, the male lead, would have a moment where he realizes that, you know, Emma is more than what she seems. And it was really cool for me to be given the opportunity in the moment, you know, to write a romantic baritone song. Because, you know, so much of contemporary musical theater is like all geared towards the tenor. The higher you can sing, the better. And actually, the whole score, Gordon really pushed me to try and get the ladies down in their like womanly range. And the more that I was thinking about it, I was like, gosh, this is really relevant, because I was reading this thing about how women in the workplace will, from the 60s on in the workplace, you started to hear intonations in their voice where they would push the ranges of their voice lower so that they actually are sounding more manly.
Assertive.
Yes,
sure.
More assertive in their voices. So that I just thought that was really interesting, and pushing some of the ranges lower and getting them, you know, in that area. But the song where Knightley, you know, has the realization of Emma is called Without Her, and it's in the second act. And I think that's one of my favorite moments. And, you know, it's funny because what is it they always say, Gordon, you know, when the book works, everybody says the score's great. And when the book doesn't work, everybody says the musical's crappy, right?
When the book doesn't work, they just say the book doesn't work.
Right. So, you know, the book writer really doesn't get the recognition, you know, that he deserves a lot of the times. And I really think that, you know, Gordon's done a really nice job of, you know, setting everything up and getting it outlined and putting, you know, the wit and the charm into these characters. And it's just been a real pleasure working from the beginning and massaging it and sculpting it into what it is today. And, you know, we still have more work to do. Let's not fool ourselves, but you know, I'm really proud of where it is, I think, right now.
The cool thing about figuring out a moment like that, where a character suddenly has this epiphany, which musicals are full of, is thinking about how that particular character would express it and what that moment would be like for them. We started by looking at Pygmalion.
I was going to say, that's the I've grown accustomed to her face number.
Exactly. Exactly. Because we thought, it's got to be indirect. It can't be, he can't sing suddenly that he loves her. It has to be, you know, things aren't so bad. Everything is fine. My life is absolutely fine. And then there are other kind of neat moments like that where I feel like the trick was in capturing the voice of that character, and that specificity makes it feel so real, so authentic. Like when her dad has that oracle moment at the end of, near the end of the show, he sings When It's Right, and he sort of encapsulates one of the overarching ideas of the show, which is that when it's right, it's imperfect. You know, imperfections are what make people so human and lovable and special, and it's something that I think takes people a while to learn and to trust, not only in matters romantic, but in matters theatrical, too.
That's true.
I have to tell that to actors who, particularly really, really smart perfectionist actors, who stress out about things not being just so. But the interesting lesson is that people come to the theater to see a little bit of danger. They want
right. They
want the rough edges, which is how you explain Cirque du Soleil. Like, and if there's a massive safety net under them, it's not as much fun.
Single Girls Guide runs at Cap Rep through the end of this month. Gordon Greenberg and Tommy Newman, thank you very much for joining me. I had an absolute blast watching the show. I hope to see it again before it closes. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sarah.
Single Girls Guide runs at Capitol Rep in Albany through March 30th. For tickets and showtime information, visit capitolrep.org. Our guests have been Gordon Greenberg and Tommy Newman, who wrote the book and the music and lyrics, respectively. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.